This is episode 79 of the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops with Scott Hoag. In this episode, we talk about Microsoft Azure and how it integrates with Office 365. You can support this podcast by purchasing guides from www.ciaops.com/publications. There you will find a range of information on using technologies like SharePoint and Office 365. You'll also find templates there to use on your own SharePoint site to help your business get up to speed quickly. Reseller options are also available. All of this can be downloaded immediately at www.ciaops.com/publications. So just a quick word from me before we get into the meat of our podcast. I want to again thank you for providing feedback and also taking the time to listen to this podcast. I know that you have a busy day and appreciate you spending time with me and my guest to cover these technology topics. So a couple of updates. What you may not have seen is that there is a new Yammer admin portal. This gives you information about using Yammer, getting started with Yammer. So that's a great reference for those looking to get into Yammer. I think Yammer's having a big impact on many businesses, big and small. So I'll put the link in the show notes for that. There's also a speech that I gave recently on creating a single sign-on portal using Azure that I have uploaded to YouTube for you to view. So that's the full presentation. Audio might not be 100% because obviously it was done in a large room, but you'll get the gist of it. So I certainly recommend that you take a look at that, and I'll put again the notes for that in the post when I put it up. Also, I will point out that there are some updates around the Enterprise Mobility Suite for those Microsoft partners who have Action Pack or better. This basically allows you to access things like Windows Intune and some of the ability to manage devices. This used to be, again, a premium service of Azure AD, now being made available and also being made available via Open to sell to clients. So again, if you haven't had a look at it, spend some time looking at the Enterprise Mobility Suite, or EMS as it is known for short. Before we get into it again, I'll plug my free Getting Started with SharePoint course. You'll find that at bit.ly/gs-spo, so bit.ly/gs-spo. Also my Azure course, which you'll find at www.ciaops.com/publications. And always encourage people to provide feedback or actually get in touch with me. You can connect with me if you have link, admin@ciaops365.com. So link soon to be Skype for Business. Don't forget, if you're listening on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever, that you do provide a review, give us a rating, let us know how we're going, hopefully vote it up so that it will be heard by more people. And again, letting me know what you think of the topics. And speaking of that, always looking for more information on how to improve, how to add more content that's relevant, and look for listener feedback. So if you'll take a minute, let me know what you think, good, bad or indifferent. I'd love to hear from you, and you can do that directly via www.ciaops.com/contact. And now without further ado, let's get into the podcast. Welcome along to another Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. My name is Robert Crane, and in this episode, I'm joined by Scott Hoag. Scott, welcome.
Hi, Robert. How are you today?
Not too bad. Welcome along. Good to have you along, and a bit of a different perspective today on some IaaS stuff, some AWS, and some Azure, which is great news. But before we dive into that, as we always do, why don't you introduce yourself to the listeners, let them know who you are and what you do.
Sure. My name is Scott Hoag. I'm an infrastructure consultant with a company called Applied Information Sciences. Officially, we're based out of Reston, Virginia in the United States. I happen to work out of our Sydney office, so I'm local in New South Wales. We're a Microsoft partner, play very heavily in this new cloud-first, mobile-first world. I spend a lot of my days doing IaaS deployments, helping customers make that transition over to the cloud, whether that's with traditional workloads or one of my other kind of niche areas is SharePoint as well.
It's always good to hear someone else's into the SharePoint side. That's probably one of the, I suppose, the biggest revolutions we've seen of late, with obviously the move to Office 365 and that sort of thing. In your experience, is that sort of, you know, bringing SharePoint more to the masses? Are more people adopting it, are you finding?
I think it's an interesting space. So when we look at something like Office 365, there's been a lot of, I call it mis-messaging from Microsoft around the way they've pushed kind of that product stack. And I think that a lot of organizations felt they were being left behind if they were on premises. So that story has started to change a little bit over time. Now we're starting to look at more hybrid deployments and how we can actually get the best workloads and the most bang for our buck as we move through different solutions and look at what's out there. So when you look at Office 365, hugely compelling offering with not just SharePoint Online, but we've also got Link and Exchange and Yammer and all these other workloads that we can integrate. A lot of my customers still tend to live in that on-premises world. They either have data sovereignty or they want to hold on to what they have, or they just have in SharePoint land, you know, a lot of customizations that can't be deployed to the cloud yet. So we investigate that hybrid space where we can for them, where it makes sense. One of the big places we actually see it makes sense a lot is on the identity side of things. So when we start pushing workloads into Office 365, typically we're pulling identity along with that. And with all our identities in Office 365 being backed by Azure Active Directory, we can do a lot of other interesting things with those Azure subscriptions. Whether that's deploying other PaaS websites that can tie now into our on-premises identities, but out in this other data center and make them accessible to our end users. Or another space we see a lot of success with that is with mobile applications, either tablet applications on a Windows tablet, or even iOS or Android apps, being able to tie some of that data in, but continue to leverage our on-premises identities.
Cool. All right. Well, we mentioned the A word a couple of times there, Azure. So, I mean, in your sense, if someone comes to you, a customer comes to you and says, you know, what is Azure? What's your answer to that?
It's a tough one. Azure is Microsoft's cloud platform. And I tend to like to introduce customers to it as a holistic platform. So I think a lot of people, when they step back and they take a look at it, they say, okay, it's the cloud. It just does infrastructure as a service, or maybe it just does platform as a service. But it's really a mix of that infrastructure, platform, and software as a service side of things. So I think introducing customers to it tends to be a little bit hard because it's such a wide landscape. So we tend to focus in. If you have particular workloads that are going to focus on the IaaS side, great, let's do that. If you're looking at doing things like a transition to websites, let's take a look at where we can take some of your on-premises roles and move those either into the PaaS world, whether that's web or worker roles, or all the way over to things like Azure websites. And then where can we adopt software as a service along the way to help us out? So one great example is when we do things like SharePoint deployments. Typically, we have these requirements to send outbound emails. So on-premises, we would leverage those SMTP servers that sit internally. When we go out to something like Azure, we can leverage marketplace services like SendGrid to take care of those pieces for us.
Okay, so we've also mentioned IaaS and PaaS. So do you want to perhaps give us a bit of a definition of what the difference is and what those refer to, especially in maybe the Azure sense?
Sure. So with IaaS, we tend to manage a lot more of the stack. So if we were traditionally on-premises, we would manage everything. We would manage our power, all the kits in the racks, networking. We'd be responsible for provisioning new hardware, installing hard drives, and then we'd be installing operating systems and deploying our applications on top of that. So with infrastructure as a service, your provider is going to take care of a certain measure of that. So typically, they're going to be providing some level of virtualization. So they'll provide a hypervisor to you. So in the case of Azure, they're basically providing a backend backplane to deploy onto the fabric. And they'll handle all your virtualization, all your networking. And as a customer or as a consumer of these services, we would come in and deploy our operating systems on top of that. And then we'd be responsible for patching and maintenance of those operating systems moving forward. And kind of we can lay our applications down per our requirements and push things along. So once we make that transition from that IaaS world where we're managing the operating systems and kind of the patching, we can move a little bit more over to that platform side. And Microsoft has a few different offerings in platform as a service. So one of the easiest transitions to make is probably over to this concept of web or worker roles. So these are managed roles that Microsoft that you can deploy, but Microsoft is going to manage the OS. So they're completely ephemeral and stateless. So when they get rebooted, they always kind of come up in a fresh state. But they're really great for deploying things like web services out to on a web role, or if we have some kind of batching services that we need to do and run through console applications and things like that. Those are great places to use worker roles. So really the only difference between those is a worker role is a base Windows VM that Microsoft is going to manage the patch level for you. A web role is that same exact VM, but it happens to have IIS already installed and deployed onto it. And then we can go a step further beyond that and adopt even a little bit more of the platform and move into something like Azure Websites. So if we move into something like Azure Websites, that's basically a fully managed IIS offering. We have a bunch of different choices around what size of website we deploy, basically how many resources do we want to consume? Do we want dedicated CPU, memory, that kind of thing? And Microsoft will handle the entire back-end platform deployment of that, including the installation of things like PHP and Java runtimes. So it's not just the .NET world that we have to live in. If you have a WordPress site that you want to host in Azure, easy. It just goes straight into Azure Websites. You actually get to pick your version of PHP that you want to deploy on, click a few buttons, and you're off and running. So that platform as a service offering is really nice. It cuts down on the amount of maintenance that organizations need to do internally. They don't need to worry about, hey, do we have the latest and greatest security patches applied? I deployed this website into IIS. Did I have the right modules installed, everything? Microsoft takes care of that whole piece for you. So you really get this balance between do I want to have control over my workloads and how much control do I need? If I can cede some of that control over the back end, I can actually focus more on my application and making that better. And Microsoft, over the last year, they've gotten a lot better about blending these two worlds. So it used to be they were fairly disconnected. But at this point, we can go out today and we can do deployments where we can connect our virtual networks between our IaaS world and our PaaS world. So we can actually now have those PaaS websites or those PaaS roles talking back to our IaaS infrastructure. And our IaaS infrastructure can be tied into things like our on-premises infrastructure with a site-to-site VPN or ExpressRoute. So doing that, all of a sudden we can really have these truly blended hybrid applications where I could have something like a website that sits up in Azure. It's going to be able to talk for identity to something like Azure Active Directory, which can be dir-synced to my on-premises identity. And then if I have sensitive information that truly needs to live on-premises with me, I can leverage those site-to-site connections to be able to reach all the way back to on-premises for data or other things or monitoring or anything else along the way. So it's really a rich ecosystem and a really nice adoption story for organizations that can make it there.
And the other thing, too, a lot of people don't appreciate is that basically every Office 365 tenant, the identity is based on Azure Active Directory free, so the free version of the Azure Active Directory. You can obviously log into that, get access to that through the portal, and then start using that to build some of this other infrastructure if you want. And I mean, that's certainly correct. Are you finding that that's being, people are aware of that, it's being taken up, it's being exploited? I mean, how are you finding, that sort of area of growth?
I think that's one of the most misunderstood areas when Microsoft is going out and attempting to sell these offerings. Or I believe you're in the reseller space. So going into new customers and trying to explain when you buy Office 365, you've effectively picked up a free subscription to Azure, especially for that Active Directory piece. So I spend a lot of time myself in that identity space. I think it's hugely important for any organization that's going to adopt either platform to understand what it means, to turn all those bits and pieces on. I really love that Microsoft has come back over the past couple of months, and they've been making a push to expose that those two things are tied together a little bit more. So now we have a direct link to Azure AD from within our Office 365 Admin Center. So as they're starting to add this functionality in, they're actually letting Office 365 admins know that, hey, there's this other thing over there. And now they're going to let customers go out and click that link and provision what is effectively a truly free Azure subscription. They're not going to be asked for the typical credit card information and things like that. I think that scares some customers when you walk in and click a button and say, hey, did you know there's a free Azure subscription back here? But the very first thing we need to do is collect a credit card from you to turn it on. So that can be a little weird to explain to the folks who are actually doing the purchasing that, oh, there's this free thing, but you need to have a credit card down to just in case you spend some money. So that can tend to scare some people off. So I really like that they have that new button in there. Click over to your Azure AD. The sign-up process is a little bit simplified without that credit card capture piece in there. They've also been really good about kind of blending the offerings between Office 365 and Azure Active Directory. So when we look at some of the SKUs within Azure Active Directory, typically we have free, basic, and premium, and those all bring different things with them, whether those are SaaS deployments with the My Apps or all the way down to being able to do things like workplace join with our Windows 8.1 devices or our Windows 10 devices. So some of those things fall into that premium tier, and Microsoft has opened that up a bit, where they're now going to start offering some sign-in customizations and some of those customizations around My Apps and things to Office 365 subscribers, because there's been a bit of a, I would call it a barrier to entry, especially for a lot of smaller organizations, to some of those extended SKUs in Azure Active Directory. Basic and premium are bought through the Volume Licensing Center, which is truly confusing for organizations that aren't already on some form of enterprise agreement and have picked that up. So by blending those workloads into Office 365, I think they can expand a little bit more of that platform and go ahead and push it out to folks.
And I think also, too, that there's a bit of a misconception as to Azure, what Azure AD is versus on-prem AD. I mean, can you give us a bit of an idea, perhaps, of some of the differences and maybe some of the similarities? I mean, how is Azure AD different from what many IT professionals would consider to be the traditional on-premise domain controller?
Sure. So for something like Azure AD, if I'm talking to an IT pro, typically I like to sell the identity management portion of it. So for years, we've been deploying workloads like ADFS, Active Directory Federation servers with Federation servers and proxies, and doing these kind of secure token service deployments where we've got some form of federated identity and we're bouncing things around on the back end. So Azure AD is truly this federated login system that sits within Azure. I mean, it does a lot more than that, but it's an identity store. So it lets us store user information, group information, and then over time it's been extended to allow a lot of other kind of SaaS types of things. The big difference between something like Azure Active Directory and your on-premises Active Directory is that Azure Active Directory isn't a traditional LDAP directory. So on-premises, we can manage so much more than users and groups. We can do group policies. We have computers, we have multiple sites, all these kind of things that are tied into our organizational structure that don't necessarily translate over to Azure Active Directory today. So it tends to be fundamentally different in that it's really an identity store where we can store either singular identities or copies of our on-premises identities. So we can continue to leverage our on-premises investments. So we already have an Azure, we already have Active Directory, and we have users and groups and things like that. So Microsoft lets us take those and synchronize those to the cloud, and then we can leverage them out there for those workloads. But one of the things we can't do today is typical deployment would be something like SharePoint. So when we stand up a SharePoint farm, we need a bunch of servers. So that means we need computer accounts. And SharePoint also needs a bunch of service accounts. So we need a bunch of basically users in Active Directory. So being that Azure Active Directory really is just a federated identity, I can't join a computer to it, and I also can't leverage that for things like my service accounts for SharePoint. So I still need to have a traditional AD out there someplace today. It'll be interesting to see what Microsoft does with this over the next couple of quarters and kind of that cadence that they have for releasing things, just to see if they can start to pull group policy and computers and some other things in there. Because the messaging is pretty confusing when we say Active Directory on-premises and Azure Active Directory, but one's Active Directory, one's not Active Directory. They really don't do the same things. And then I have customers that also play around in the AWS space, and AWS has an offering called Directory Services. So they have a simple AD there. So customers can actually go to that side. They can click a button, say, create me a domain. And that's more of a traditional domain where customers can deploy users, computers, they can manage GPOs all through this kind of cloud-based directory service.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about the comparison of, say, Azure, AWS, and any other of the others. I mean, are they similar products? Do they do the same things? You know, what are some differences and maybe some similarities between the two based on your experience?
Again, they're both platforms, so they're pretty wide. If we look at something and kind of focus in on the IaaS space, AWS is a bit more mature. They've been doing it longer. They've just had more skin in the game. Microsoft has done a lot to catch up, and you know, I think they know where they're behind. So when we look at something like IaaS and AWS and that maturity, it brings all sorts of nice things with it. So when I look at a deployment like SharePoint, there are often requirements that we have around IOPS and disk speed and things like that that I can't necessarily pull in Azure without, you know, up until a couple months ago, I actually couldn't pull those disk speeds in Azure. Or today I've got to spend a bunch of money to get there, maybe even a little bit more than that side. So there's a bit more maturity around that model and being able to deploy really a more traditional workload. So there are also some things that Microsoft doesn't support in their cloud-based offering that AWS will. So for some customers, they kind of have to go that way. If they want to go to the cloud, AWS is the only choice. So one good example would be Windows Server 2003. So that's coming to end of life. You could never deploy Server 2003 in a supported fashion into Azure. And even today, if we look at Azure and I want to turn on a server and I'm going with the Microsoft Gallery images, the lowest server level they're going to support is Server 2008 R2, 64-bit. So there's no 32-bit OSs, and I really need to start off at, for a lot of organizations, what is the latest and greatest, at least to them. So AWS allows some of those other workloads to go in, x86-based workloads, some of the older workloads. And also I get a little bit more control around disk speeds and how I mix and match and put things in place. One of the big fundamental differences I find with my customers is costing. So we tend to spend a lot of time around pricing and where it makes the most sense to push a solution into the cloud. So Microsoft has a really interesting billing model where they bill by the minute, and AWS has a billing model where they bill by the hour. So in some cases, if I'm doing workloads that I only need for quick bursts, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, that kind of thing, Azure can be really economical because I can turn that on and only be charged for 10 minutes of usage versus AWS, where if I turn that workload on, I'm better off letting it run for the whole hour because I was going to use it for that time. And Microsoft and AWS have basically a pricing commitment between themselves. So anytime that AWS is going to drop one of their prices, Microsoft is basically going to drop within a couple days to a couple weeks to match that price. They have a commitment out there to say that, generally speaking, for compute resources or for these commodity resources, so compute, storage, things like that, we'll be able to match the price on everything to make it a little bit easier to kind of look across both of those and choose where a solution's going to go. So then what happens is companies like Microsoft and AWS say, well, let's differentiate on the platform side of things since we're all matching price for things like compute and storage. So that's when we get into like Azure websites, Azure Active Directory, or then we go over to something like Amazon and we say, well, you have Simple AD and you have things like Workmail, like these exchange-based offerings, kind of like Office 365. So they tend to be on level playing fields when we look at things like costing, but some are going to be a little bit more performant, you know, if we're going to pull out some fake words. AWS, in my experience, has traditionally been a little bit better maybe for production workloads where we need to guarantee performance, where things like Azure is really great for dev test. Let's leverage our MSDN credits and service credits and things like that to move along. And then production workloads, where they're going to meet within the performance constraints of Azure today.
And I think the be fair to say, like you've mentioned, is that Azure is certainly catching up in leaps and bounds. And Microsoft obviously have that as a one of their major commitments for their products. And again, it's reflected in the numbers in the fact that you're getting, you know, it's again, I think Microsoft's fastest growing product. So apart from anything, if you're a sort of a Microsoft shopper, a Microsoft IoT pro, Azure certainly is something you need to look at, especially given the fact of the integration with Office 365.
Yeah, I don't mean to sound unbullish on it. I would be extremely bullish on Azure if I was a new customer, a new partner entering that ecosystem. Just looking at the cadence they release things, they're on about a three-week release cadence right now. So they're constantly pushing updates. They know where they compete against other providers like Rackspace and AWS and some of these others. And they also know where they can really differentiate and provide value. So there's a bunch of things that, you know, if you're something like a Microsoft partner or you're a Microsoft development shop and you're coming on board, if you're deploying MSDN for your developers, or maybe you're a Microsoft partner and you're giving out MPN, MSDN licenses to your employees, they get free service credits in Azure, any place from 100 to 150 US dollars a month. So that's huge for a lot of organizations. I know for myself, working for a Microsoft consultancy, we do a lot of development around SharePoint. So a lot of our developers, they can run their workloads, their development boxes up in Azure, and we don't actually pay anything for that. So we're starting to make that transition away from let's buy everybody these huge beefy laptops that weigh 17 pounds, they have 32 gigs of RAM, and they're monsters. They're not portable, you know, they're these desktop class machines that just get really hot, they're loud, and we don't want to go from place to place with them. Versus let's deploy those workloads up into something like Azure, leverage our MSDN credits, and then we don't spend anything for it. Really, we just need to provide that connection for the pipe, and then we can get more to that bring your own device world, let our developers and our users kind of focus on productivity and the things that are going to make them better at their jobs, and hopefully we can make things a little bit easier along the way. So I know internally for us, one really interesting thing we did about a year ago, we decided to standardize on Azure as that kind of development platform for our commercial SharePoint developers. So we went out and built a stable of images, basically pre-baked VHDs for SharePoint. So what we ended up with is a repository of every kind of flavor of SharePoint. So, you know, we have SharePoint 2010 machines, we have SharePoint 2013 machines, and then we kind of designate patch levels within there. So maybe some have search services deployed on them and they're at Service Pack 1, maybe some are pre-SP1, some are up to the latest and greatest CU, things like that. And what we did is, because we deploy our identities into Office 365 and they were already in Azure, we created a PaaS website, and we said, okay, let's let our users log in. Our developers can now log in with their on-premises identities. They can actually select from that stable of images. So they can say, I want the Contoso SharePoint 2013 Service Pack 1 build. They click two buttons. They give us some of their details around their Azure subscription, and they say, copy that to my subscription. And then they walk away. And about 40 minutes later, they have a fully baked all-in-one VM that they just turn on. So if you think about something like onboarding a new developer, our process has gone from giving somebody a laptop, saying provision your laptop, turn all your stuff on, all right, go ahead and install SharePoint, but install it our way with least privileged service accounts and hook up to TFS and do all the things you need to do. You know, that could be hours, if not days, to come in, turn your account on, here's your MSDN license, go ahead and activate that, click three buttons, and 40 minutes later you've got a VM and you're basically ready to go out and bill. So there's a real measure of productivity in that, and we can see ROI and value in solutions like that.
So again, do you see that you know, these products, these you know, the cloud-based offerings of AWS and Azure growing in acceptance and growing, more customers moving to that way? Are we seeing that ramp up? And the numbers certainly seem to indicate that, but from the field sort of thing, is it something that customers now beginning to accept and adopt? Have we reached that tipping point, do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that a lot of organizations have seen the writing on the wall, and they understand that this is the way that service providers want them to go. So Microsoft as a company, this is the transition they're making, and their customers are going to come along with this one way or the other. So there used to be a lot of hesitation around what can we put out there? You know, maybe there's some legal compliance, or you know, I require a particular data storage standard. You know, so for companies that process credit cards, maybe I need PCI compliance. Microsoft has gotten much better around kind of allaying some of that fear, uncertainty, and doubt around their platforms. So for customers, or for anybody who hasn't taken a look at it, they have what they call the Trust Center, and that covers all their cloud platforms. It covers Azure and Office 365. It actually talks about how they do physical security, what are all the certifications that they have. So, you know, Azure is HIPAA compliant, it's FedRAMP compliant for U.S. federal government, it has PCI compliance, all sorts of things. So I think one of the big things for customers was there was a lot of fear about, hey, if I hand my data over to you, you know, it felt like giving away the keys to your house. A lot of those trust issues have kind of been set aside, saying, you know, now I can trust Microsoft. I see that they're growing into this platform, and they're very open about how they protect your data, and how they protect your workloads, what they're going to do, what you're going to be responsible for, et cetera, within there. So that makes it a lot easier for customers to reach out and say, okay, I'm comfortable going there. The next part of that is, how do we actually, do we want to transition on-premises workloads, or do we want to start out with kind of new workloads on the other side, and what does the connectivity between those look like? I tend to find with my customers that there's a lot of hesitation around reinvesting in moving existing workloads up. So we tend to focus on the side of, well, where can we get to that hybrid space where we connect your cloud deployment with your on-premises environment, whether that's through identity or those site-to-site VPNs, kind of express routish connections, or, you know, where can we move new workloads and get you the most bang for your buck? So we want to make your business more agile, operationally faster. Where can we do those things and kind of slot and fit in? So there's a lot of uptake around that side of things to say, all right, you know, that fear around, I don't want to lift all my existing things. Well, you don't have to. I can leverage the latest and greatest out on that side. And by the way, Microsoft is doing a lot to protect me. And I can sell that story and feel really good about the things that they're doing within their own data centers.
And I think probably the biggest challenge, correct me if I'm wrong, seems to be around the concept of the pricing, how Azure and maybe AWS prices their model. I mean, a lot of people are used to, I suppose, speccing up a solution and, this many servers, this many disks, this much memory, this much install, there's the X dollars and it runs for 5 years. That's certainly not the case anymore in this new cloud world with the way things are built.
Yeah, that transition from capital expenditures to operational expenditures, that was a tough conversation to have a couple of years ago. It's gotten easier over time. I find that conversation a lot easier to have today. I think customers are getting a little more used to it. Pricing's hugely important. So sitting down and figuring out where these solutions are going to fit and how much they're going to cost is really hard. So typically what we want to do is we want to look for workloads that have kind of predictable bursts or they have predictable compute and memory consumption needs, things like that. So we can have an idea of pricing up front because you don't want to get into a situation where maybe you go out and you want to consume some Azure. So you buy 6 months of it up front and you pay that price monthly to get a discount. And then you get to the end of your term and you've got a bunch of unused compute on the table. And the other side of that is, I don't want to do pay as you go, which is going to cost me a little bit more money because I really don't understand maybe the consumption model that I'm going to have. And then come in 6 months later and say, oh, I could have saved, 25, 30% by doing this other model if I had spent a little bit more time in a spreadsheet and figured out what was going on with things.
Yeah, I think that seems to be the big problem. There's again, I think a lot of retailers, especially in my space, complain that, there's no simple, per month. If a customer's used to the per month model, $40 a month for an Azure web for a website, how can I, calculate that out and give them the same sort of figure? So, I think, like I said, in this world, it gives them the flexibility. There's far more flexibility in pricing, and potentially, if you need to, you can turn these things off and on using PowerShell and automation and those sort of things. So again, it gives you that more flexible option. But again, the reality there is, again, that means more work, I suppose, up front, understanding how the billing is, and I think that's probably the thing that we're missing, but I suppose that's very hard to do given the rapid rate of change that Azure services are going through and the price changes and the new offerings that have become available. To put all that in one simple location ends up being very hard.
Yeah, I think it's very difficult, especially for managed service providers or resellers. So I think from Microsoft's side, really they're looking for consumption. So they from their perspective, a license is a license. So if you're on an iOS device and you want to use Microsoft Word through Office 365, that's great because you're paying for an Office 365 license. But then you or other service providers going out and saying, oh, we want to offer this service to our customers, Microsoft's kind of left a little bit of wiggle room for themselves there to say, well, okay, we're going to offer you the tooling. So the tooling would be Azure, the platform, but we need you to figure out pricing. So there's nothing to say that resellers or Microsoft partners or really anybody can't go out and buy a bunch of Azure. And then sell that back to their clients. So in that use case of, well, I want to be able to have a $40 per month fixed spend, a partner or somebody else could figure out kind of their margin on that and what they need and if they can make that work. A lot of the customers I work with, they tend to be larger organizations, so they're actually going straight to Microsoft and purchasing through an EA or some other route. So there's a bunch of different ways to get in there. It is hugely confusing when you look at pricing solutions. I wish there was a better model around that. There are some pricing calculators and things like that that are offered. Typically they're in US dollars and they focus on one deployment region. So they'd be in US dollars and they look at US East. So one of the things with the cloud is every place we deploy, the pricing's a little bit different. So typically, when we look at APAC, things cost a bit more money to run out here due to just whatever reason, higher cost for deployment. Maybe they're paying more for their locations, things like that. But it'd be really nice to have a pricing calculator where I could go out and say, okay, let me plug a bunch of these numbers in and actually see the pricing for Sydney versus US West versus Singapore. and put all those things together. So I think a lot of that's on partners today to build out those pieces and put them together. One of the big things I think Microsoft misses there too on that kind of let's look at the initial pricing side of things is overall TCO. So one company that does offer some insight there is actually Amazon. So they have a total cost of ownership calculator that will factor in things for organizations like their current on-premises data centers. So how much are they paying for heating and cooling and power, manpower, things like that. So you can kind of blend some of these numbers and get to a point. But it's a huge pain point. I don't necessarily know how folks are going to get around it without just spending a lot of time with the tooling. You know, it goes back to that old kind of joke around why do we need certifications around things like Microsoft licensing? Well, because Microsoft licensing is really hard to understand sometimes. It'd be nice if maybe there was a certification path or something else where we could have something around how do we do cloud pricing and consumption pricing to help figure that out? Because it's one thing to sell the story behind it. It's another thing to sit down and say, okay, now you actually have to break out your credit card and pay for it. And what's that going to look like?
Yeah, I think, again, it is something that I think a lot of people need to make the investment in. You're getting that flexibility, but, again, you probably need to build the costing model, and that can be a bit time-consuming, I admit. But, again, it's a matter of being on top of it, and you're utilizing that to the best ability. So, again, you're not having necessarily to go through and spec all the machines up and, you know, find the right parts and find all the matching configuration. So that time, some of that time needs to be spent in, you know, working out potentially some of the costs or working the optimization. So look, this is the range we expect it to be in. And the other general thing is the prices are generally on the decrease. So I think perhaps more and more there's less costing going into the infrastructure and more into the services. So, but again, I think that's, again, a bit of a mindset change and a little bit of work that needs to be done to come up to speed, you know, sort of in that respect. So, all right, with that said, I think that we need to begin to round this up. So what I might do is just get Scott maybe to give us a bit of a quick summary of what we've covered today, what, you know, you're enthusiastic about, what you see the biggest potential is. And I suppose, you know, for those who haven't, you know, got into Azure in a big way, where should they be looking for their opportunities?
Sure. So, you know, I think the biggest thing is for anybody that's out there that hasn't started to take a look at these services, you absolutely need to go out there and start playing around with them, whether that's Azure, AWS, or somebody else. If you have MSDN licensing, you should absolutely be leveraging your free service credits. It's quite literally a button that you click from your MSDN account and say, activate this. And that's free money that you know, folks are leaving on the table every month that gives them a path in. And then once you're in there, if you're an IT pro, definitely start to take a look at some of those IaaS components and see where virtual machines in the cloud are maybe a little bit different than the way you run virtual machines on premises and how we can tie some of our virtual networks and things in there. I think for learning some of those resources, Microsoft has a great website. It's called Microsoft Virtual Academy. It has a number of basically CBTs, computer-based training, modules out there where people can go out and follow along module 1, module 2, module 3, and actually start to get a handle on some of those pieces. So that's kind of one side of it is start to play around with it and have a look at it and see where it might fit. The other place that I would highly encourage anybody to look at if they're not already there is start looking at orchestration and automation, particularly via PowerShell and desired state configuration, some of these new kind of things. So it's a brave new world we're entering as IT pros, and that can be a little bit scary transitioning away from GUIs and things like that. But that's going to continue to happen as Microsoft comes out with new products. So it's very important as IT pros that we be properly positioned to be able to go out and build some of these solutions. So if anybody doesn't know PowerShell today, they definitely need to go out there and get a handle on that. Again, there's a bunch of great resources out there. I would actually point people to a particular course on Microsoft Virtual Academy for that. There's a PowerShell Jumpstart with Jeffrey Snover. He's kind of the guy who is in charge of PowerShell at Microsoft. He's a technical fellow at Microsoft. So you can actually go out and watch videos from kind of the creator of this technology and Microsoft's mindset and his mindset as they drive the product development behind that.
Cool. All right. Well, with all that information and as a final wrap up, do you want to let people know how they can get in contact with you if they have further questions or, again, maybe want to understand a bit better what you're doing and how you're doing it with these sort of solutions?
Sure. So you can find me on Twitter. I'm at Ciphertext, CIPHTXT. I blog on psconfig.com. So for the SharePoint geeks out there, they should be pretty familiar with psconfig. I also have a tech podcast that I run with a gentleman called Dan Usher, who's an Office 365 MVP, and that can be found at brewery.fm. And folks can get a hold of me kind of through all those different venues. I have contact information and everything on the blog if someone wants to shoot me an email or have further discussions.
Cool. All right. Well, I'll take this opportunity to thank Scott and his knowledge and the time that he's given us to today and shared all that information, which I think has been great about Azure. And again, remember that everybody out there who has Office 365, you have an Azure AD tenant underneath. I've done a number of blog posts on how to enable that and then how to set up an Azure single sign-on and then now how to do the user self-service password resets, all available for free out of the box. And I think it's great that Microsoft is making these sort of things available. If you're an IT pro, you certainly need to get into Azure, use those free credits and get involved. I'll also plug the fact that I've got an introduction or getting started with Azure course in my publications location. So ciops.com/publications. And as always, you can get in contact with me on the Twitter at DirectorCIA or follow my blog at blog.ciaops.com. But with that, I will call this podcast to an end and thank everybody for listening. You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For guides on using technologies like SharePoint Online and Office 365, visit www.ciaops.com/publications. By purchasing from the selection available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact.